This is Audible.
Dollars, Book 2 of the Dollars series. Written by Pepper Winters. Narrated by Kylie Stewart and Eric Rolon. Prologue, Pimlico. There comes a point in life where determination supersedes circumstance, where willpower wins over what should be done. I'd lived in that point for 2 years. I fought my battle silently. I lived in a war zone without a word. I didn't do it consciously. I did it because I had no other choice. My idiotic will to survive kept me living, even when I wanted to die. It kept me hoping, even when none existed. And every day granted punishment, especially when the dragon-tattooed stranger entered my prison. He made it worse. So, so much worse. But then he came back. He stole me. Just in time.
Chapter 1, Elder. Arriving at the dock relaxed me a little. Not that I was tense. Killing didn't faze me. Stealing a bleeding, dying woman didn't increase my heart rate. I'd done worse. Seen worse. Lived through worse. It was just another day in my world. However, during the last few kilometers through downtown Crete, Pimlico had passed out again, either from pain or shock or loss of blood. Most likely all three. I didn't intend for my hard work to be for nothing. I wanted her. I wanted to keep her for the time being, regardless of what it would do to me and the hourly struggle I would endure. The second I'd set eyes on her, this was the path I'd chosen. It was inevitable for a man like me. Her strength, her bruises, everything about her screamed for it to end, yet she still clung to hope. That blind faith, tolerance for forgiveness, and stupid belief she could win latched onto the obsessions inside me and made me care. I didn't want to fucking care about anyone anymore. It hurt too damn much. But Pimlico, she'd been given a shitty life and somehow still glowed with expectation that somehow, some way, she'd be free. Free, I scoffed. I'd stolen her with the intention of keeping her, not freeing her. Her blood and silence forced me to answer that misplaced hope in her gaze, but only to prove I could keep her alive and deliver a better kind of life, even while still belonging to someone. Me. She belongs to me now. And that complicated my existence a shit ton. Stalking up the large gangway, I left the dealing of the car to Celix. It had its own berth in the hole below, and strode aboard the luxury yacht, valued in excess of $200 million. The expensive gleam and untouchable power of such a vessel didn't hold my attention nearly as much as the wraith in my arms. Her blood soaked through my blazer, dousing me in crimson wet violence, even as the rigging glittered with fresh white ropes and the timber balustrades gleamed with nautical speed. Pimlico roused, blinking at the turquoise sea and the sudden flurry of white-dressed staff as they flew around deck to cast off. Before, I'd liked their uniforms and how smart they made my home. Now, I hated all things fucking white. Lies and sins and abuse, all hidden in the achromatic palette. Ulrich and his color preferences had ensured I'd changed the dress code as soon as possible. Pimlico flopped unconscious again, the bleeding from her mouth never ceasing. Taking her to a mainland hospital was not an option. All the doctors in Crete were butchers. I didn't live on the land for a reason. I hated conceited assholes and brain-dead morons who believed their opinion mattered to those around them. Instead, I'd claimed the sea as my home. I'd lived on her waves and swam in her belly every day for the past 4 years. Even when I was on Earth, my feet still swayed to the current of the ocean. Being back on the gentle roll stole my escalating worry over what I'd sentenced myself to and allowed me to breathe fully for the first time since I disembarked 5 days ago. 5 days was far too fucking long. I needed to be far away from here, I needed empty horizons and lonely expanses. Ignoring the staff who glanced my way, then did a double take at the girl, leaving ruby droplets in my wake, I entered the first floor deck and pressed the silver button for the elevator. It yawned wide as if waiting for such a task and closed silently, descending the moment I touched button 9. The mirrors on all four walls bounced my reflection back, showing a man who'd stepped over his boundaries of survivable circumstances. Already the clawing inside me began, the repetitive thoughts of what I would expect from her in return for this. I'd fucked up my own life to save hers. She owes more than she could ever repay. As the lift slowed and the doors opened, Michaels met me. Celix called ahead, told me to prep surgery. Give me the scoop. He glanced at the stolen slave in my embrace. He didn't flinch at the blood or look at me with accusation. Mainly because he knew me. He knew I inflicted violence to those who deserved it, but did my best to prevent those who didn't. Celix had once again proven his excessive salary was worth it by streamlining Pimlico's arrival. Her tongue is partially severed, but not fully. Michaels narrowed his eyes, tipping her chin up with a gentle finger. That's workable. His no-nonsense manner was appreciated. I'd headhunted the English doctor from a sabbatical in India. He was one of the best in his field, and his field included most surgeries and other complicated care. I trusted him, especially after what he'd done for me 2 years ago, when my own fucking arrogance almost got me killed. I clutched the unconscious girl tighter. Severe blood loss, multiple injuries, some old, some new. Doubt she's seen a doctor in years. Michaels nodded. Righto, the surgery is all prepped. I'll concentrate on her tongue before doing a full assessment. Snapping his fingers, two nurses rolled a gurney forward, waiting until I'd placed Pimlico on the green material, ready for the operating theater. My arms ached from carrying her, but I also ached for a different reason. I didn't like that she was in so much pain. Fuck, get your head together. If I let sympathy and protectiveness gather so soon into owning her, I wouldn't last a week. How long before you fixed her? Michael scowled, his red hair and white complexion hinting at his Anglo-Saxon roots. Hard to see until I've assessed what needs to be done. Come back in a few hours and I'll let you know. Impatience snarled, but I fought it back. A few hours to halt death and keep her in my world? It was a small price to pay. With a curt nod, I left the sterile deck of medicine, heading back up to fresh air. It was a ritual I never broke. I had to be at the bow when leaving port. My hands were slippery with Pimlico's blood as I strode over an immaculate deck of oak, cherry, and teak. My mind raced with things I should be doing, the urge to take precautions so I didn't slip backward into my own personal hell berated me. Now Pimlico was mine. I had no way of ignoring my desires. She was close. She was on my boat. The sooner I accepted that I had access to her whenever I damn well wanted, and put rules in place so I didn't destroy us both, the better. Not caring her blood stained my fingers, I dragged them through my hair as I stood at the front of the yacht. Engines growled below, propellers chopped the tide into sushi, slowly pushing the big beast into motion. I looked over my shoulder at the bridge, where my captain and his team handled my vessel with expert ministrations. Leaving port on such a big ship was never easy, and my heart thudded as Phantom nudged away from her mooring, then leisurely opened up, heading toward the open seas. As salty air replaced smog and the rock of a movable world deleted the landlocked mundane, I closed my eyes and forced myself to relax. The stickiness of Pim's blood dried on my skin the faster Phantom flew. I would have given away my entire ill-gotten fortune to leap into the ocean and wash away the gore sticking to my flesh. However, I would have to be patient. Once we were far, far away, I'd get my wish. For now, I was happy saying goodbye to Crete. My thoughts turned inward to the dirt I'd climbed from, the mud I'd flung off my back, and the filth I'd invited into my world to survive. A few years ago, I'd found refuge in alleys, wielding a knife to protect the one person I cared about. Now I stood on multi-million dollars worth of prestige, with its silken decks, seamless windows, and bullet-shaped hull, while glaring at the same mocking sun that had watched me transform from penniless to prince. Up until today, I'd accepted the man I'd become to make that happen. I was happy with the man I'd become. But Pimlico refused to leave my conscience, taunting me with memories of hardship, hunger, and helplessness. She forced me to remember things I had no desire to recall, all because she suffered the same way I had. Her prison included a home with a monster. My prison had included the streets with gangs. Our similarities ended there. Unlike her, who'd begged the devil for death and lived a half-life in a world she couldn't escape, I'd cheated and stolen and built a bridge from destitution to untouchable. Like her, I'd killed those who wronged me. I was fucking proud of her for that. She'd surprised and impressed me when she'd pulled the trigger without any remorse. She was so bloody strong. I wanted to see how deep that strength went. It would be a little while before land fully disappeared, but by the time Pimlico woke up, she wouldn't belong to Terra Firma anymore. Not to Ulrich or assholes or death. No. By the time she woke up, she belonged to me and the sea. And there was no escape with water as her new prison and me as her new jailer. I'm sorry for what I'm about to do to you, Pim, but you're mine now.
Chapter 2. Pimlico. My first thought was of water and drinking and thirst. My second thought was pain. Pain, pain. My hands flew up to hug my mouth. I wanted to cradle my butchered tongue, but someone grabbed my wrist, keeping me restrained.
Ah, no touching. You need to keep all foreign items, including unwashed fingers, away from the wound.
My eyes widened as I blinked into focus a man with shaggy, ginger-red hair. His eyes were the first I'd seen in so long that didn't harbor sin or evil sickness. His handsome face was normal. He was normal. Not an ogre or troll. He isn't Mr. Prest. Where am I? My gaze drifted down his doctor's gown, searching for a name tag. Nothing. Not even a stethoscope around his neck or a thermometer peeking from his breast pocket. The only thing mar in his clinical uniform was a horrendous splash of blood right over his chest. He followed my glance.
Yes, you, threw up on the operating table before I could administer anesthetic.
He frowned.
Do you remember the events leading up to now?
Wait. Did Mr. Press drop me off at a hospital? Am I free? My heart bounced in a cheerleading outfit to celebrate. Taking my wrist, he counted my pulse, not looking at the bruises or rope bracelets I'd long since grown used to.
You'll feel a bit sluggish over the next few hours, but I'll keep your pain managed with morphine. If you feel any discomfort, let me know, and I'll do my best to help.
Discomfort? He thought whatever drugs he pumped into the IV piercing the back of my hand muted the agony. He's obviously never had a partially severed tongue before. The sensation was worse than any boot or fist, stranger than any abuse I'd suffered. The muscle was swollen and thick, and so different to what a tongue should feel like. Inhaling through my nose, I instructed the damaged thing to move. I winced in agony as pulls of pressure from the sharp knots of stitches hit me hard. Will it ever be more than a useless lump in my mouth? Am I a bona fide mute after all? He stood watching, shifting uncomfortably as the silence lingered. Once again my power over quietness prevailed. I found sanctuary in the pause. I could live in its peace forever. The only man who turned silence against me was Mr. Prest. And he's not here. And I didn't know why my pulse quickened with anticipation, then slowed with a thread of disappointment. Why is he not here? The doctor cleared his throat.
My name is Andrew Michaels. I am the onboard surgeon. I oversee the small medical team here on the Phantom.
On board? So I'm not at a hospital. Not free. Instead of worrying about my captivity, I focused on the name that sprung up before. What is Phantom? I stared harder into his eyes, ignoring the padding wedged between my chin to catch any drool and the awful steady throb in my mouth. Not noticing my mute request for more information, Michael stepped around my recovery bed and pulled open a drawer to my right by the IV. His hand disappeared inside, yanking free a pad of paper with the crest of some smoky, ghostly design. His fingers vanished again, rustling sounded, followed by the appearance of a pen. Holding both, he turned to me, then awkwardly tried to place them in my possession. I didn't move. Not because my body ached and cried for all the abuse it suffered, but because I honestly didn't remember how to accept a gift that wasn't going to hurt me the moment I reached for it.
This is so you can talk. I'm sure you have questions.
He tried again to pass me the notepad and pen. I gritted my teeth, amplifying my swollen tongue. The sensation was foreign and so, so wrong. The tickle of stitches itched my palate as I swallowed a rank metallic taste of old blood. I shuddered. A panic attack billowed just out of calming distance, a tempest growing with forked lightning and gales. My soul grew claustrophobic, as if it could shed this old carcass and find a newer, less broken one. I felt dirty and used and useless, and not just because I hadn't showered in forever. The past few years clung to me even though Master A was dead. The memory jolted me. He's dead. I killed him. The quickly forming panic attack paused, swirling with knowledge that I'd finally won. I hadn't had to die to be free of him. He died. Goosebumps careened down my spine as I remember the heavy squeeze of the trigger and the splash of red. If I was strong enough to kill the man who'd done this to me, then I was strong enough to remain brave and figure out what this new future meant. Wait. A new memory superseded the murder. Something about an ocean and a boat and him, Mr. Prest. Well, that answers that question. I wasn't free. I was still in the custody of the man who held my life in his palm. Elder Prest was a lot of things, but he'd taken care of me, given me medical support, and left me in the care of a normal human being who didn't expect sex or screams. That was enough for now. I'm lucky to be where I am. If a half-severed tongue was the price I had to pay for it, then fine. I reached out and took the notepad and pen. The needle in the back of my hand stung as I curled my fingers around the first ordinary things I'd been allowed in so long. There was no strike or fist, no laugh or threat, just a kind smile and nod of encouragement. The moment the welcoming papyrus filled my touch, I had an unbearable desire to write to no one, to reveal what happened and why my future notes would be on paper and not toilet tissue. He still has my other letters. My eyes flew around the small, nondescript room, with no windows and artificial light feathering up the walls to make it seem day rather than luminescent bulbs. Where had Mr. Prest put his blazer with my stolen stories? Elder. He told you to call him Elder. But why? He'd been so adamant about Master A not using his first name, yet he'd given me carte blanche to use it how I wanted. I didn't understand.
You do know how to write, don't you?
Andrew Michaels cleared his throat.
Judging by your injuries, you've been mistreated for a long time. Did anyone teach you to read, to use a pen?
He cocked his head at the door.
I can get a female if you'd prefer. Just occurred to me, you might not want a man around.
I let him prattle on all while my finger stroked my pen and paper gift.
I was the surgeon who worked on you. I ensured your tongue was repositioned correctly and sutured with internal and external stitches. Don't worry, they'll dissolve on their own in a week or so.
A week? That wasn't long enough, was it?
Tongues are the fastest part of our bodies to heal. You should have full mobility back very soon. The pain and swelling will decrease every day. However, I can't guarantee you'll have full use of your taste buds and heat sensitivity. That is out of my realms of expertise, I'm afraid.
My mind whirled with information and questions. Will I be able to talk? Will I be allowed to go home once I'm better?
I also took the liberty to ensure your other injuries were tended to while you were unconscious.
He pointed at my plastic cast and bandaged hand, and another bandage that tightened around my rib cage every time I breathed.
You had a few heavily bruised ribs, and obviously you knew the bones in your hand were broken.
His smile was gentle but full of authority, just like other doctors in my past.
I did my best to tend to you, but I have my oath. I didn't touch you anywhere else.
If I wasn't so shocked to have a man doing his utmost to assure me no untoward attention was given while I wasn't awake to even notice, I might have smiled. I might have reached out willingly for the first time and patted his arm with gratitude. But all this attention, kind healing attention, made me nervous. I couldn't stop searching for the underlying hellion who would make me pay for such kindness by beating me bloody. I dropped my gaze. I wanted solitude so I could investigate my body and patch together the missing pieces of the past few hours. All I could think about was Elder as he held me tight in his car. He hadn't cared about the blood or the fact he'd committed a crime for me. He'd just given me permission to use his name and then deposited me here. What does he expect in return? Nothing was free, and killing to give me life was the biggest debt of all. Dr. Michaels didn't look away as I opened the notebook and clicked the pen to reveal the nib. My brain hurt with unanswered questions and fear. No one was my outlet for such worries, the only one I could turn to. My fingers itched to write, to scribble as fast as I could and demand freedom and food and fantastical things, like my mother to find me and my friends to welcome me back to life. But all I could do was stroke the pristine-lined paper and sniff silently as tears slowly spilled from my eyes. I didn't mean to cry. I didn't even realize liquid had formed until tears tracked unpermitted down my cheeks. I couldn't stop the droplets, just as I couldn't stop the throbbing of my tongue or the battering memories of what I'd endured at the hands of that sadistic bastard. Long minutes passed where I forgot about the doctor and spiraled into myself. The silence grew too much for him. He cleared his throat again.
I'll leave you to rest. I have no doubt you've been through a lot.
He lowered his voice.
Whatever happened is over now. Don't let the memories haunt you, okay? You're safe.
Patting my hand, he smiled softly.
As long as you're on the Phantom, Mr. Prest will take care of you.
Chapter 3, Elder.
Sir, the girl is awake. My head wrenched up from the glowering screen of my laptop. Celix stood over the threshold in a fresh suit with his long hair neatly tied. Whether it was a casual day at sea doing office work or tearing through the city with a dying girl in the back seat, his look didn't change. It never had, ever. Our days on the streets, he'd been the same. Perhaps not in a suit, but identical in calculating intelligence and uncut hair. I respected him for that. I just wished I exuded the same calm he did. My insides were a tangled mess, my temper harsh with crippling need to tear apart those animals again and again, then force him to speak to me as payment. I've earned it, goddammit. The silent treatment wouldn't work now she was in my domain. It couldn't. I'd claimed her. My requirements would only get stronger and harder to ignore. Only her voice would offer temporary relief. Reclining in my chair, I gave Celix my full attention. Ever since we'd left port, I'd used the satellite internet to check the police scanners and crime network for any hint of the bloodbath at Ulrich's home. It bothered me that nothing had been reported, even 6 hours after the incident. And it fucked me off that the third friend who'd been at dinner that first night hadn't turned up to be murdered too. He was still out there, raping and hurting, polluting the world with his defilement. I'd track him down eventually and put him out of his misery. But for now, more pressing things needed my attention.
Was Michaels able to save her tongue?
My voice resembled scratchy granite. I hadn't spoken for hours, and the effects of no sleep made me rough.
I believe he wanted to give you the report himself.
Seelig stood to the side, welcoming the onboard doctor into my office. The moment Michaels appeared, Seelig nodded and vanished through the door, closing it quietly.
I trust you're relaxing now you're back home?
Michaels came forward.
It's preferable to the squalor on land.
I jumped to the true reason for his visit. I didn't have time for chit-chat.
So? Tell me the girl's status.
I closed the laptop, hiding the software I'd used to hack my way to illegal answers. I trusted my staff, but they didn't need to know anything more about me than I paid their salaries and expected exemplary service in return. Michaels clasped his hands over his fresh black shirt and slacks. He must have changed after dealing with Pimlico.
She's a weak and lucid. She obviously can't talk, but I've given her a notepad and pen to communicate if she wishes.
And has she?
Has she what?
What did he think? Flew?
Communicated?
He rubbed the back of his neck.
Ah, no. Not as such. She accepted the paper, but hasn't written anything yet.
He coughed.
I don't know where you found her, but the abuse her body has been through has aged her considerably. Her spine is that of a 40-year-old. Not a girl in her early 20s. Her teeth need care, and some of the bruises have caused internal damage. Not just surface discoloration.
Will she survive?
It's hard to say. She survived this long. She'll have help and nutritious food and medicine, but she'll never be able to do rigorous sports or strenuous exercise without discomfort. She'll most likely endure early-onset arthritis from her injuries. She'll need to be monitored for any signs of stiffening and bone heat.
Fuck. Not only had years of her freedom and happiness been stolen, but she'd suffered long-term damage, too. Hadn't she paid enough?
Shit, life isn't fair.
And thought isn't the worst thing, Michaels added. I froze.
What do you mean?
I mean, how old was she when she was taken into captivity? He held up a hand to signal he wasn't done talking.
And you don't need to confirm or deny if I'm right. I've seen enough cases like this to know she's been a slave.
My breathing turned shallow. I'd enlisted Michaels because he was the best, but being the best meant he was smart. And he was too fucking smart for his own good.
It's not your business. I crossed my arms. Let it go.
I know it's not my business, but I'm aware you've made that yours. It would be wise to know her history, her family. Hell, it would be better if you dropped her off at the nearest cop shop. Not even Seelig would dare to be so presumptuous with suggestions. My hands locked into fists.
Like I just suggested, let it go. She's none of your concern.
Wrong. She is my concern. Her health at least.
His face darkened with curiosity.
Do you know anything about her? The way she stared at the notepad makes me think she can't read and write. She's a starved, broken thing who has no tools for life or much of a future.
My vision hazed red. She's not broken.
Well, I beg to differ. She has a few bones.
Bones don't make her broken.
Yes, but...
And she's not illiterate.
Michaels paused. How do you know?
Because I've read her letters, glimpsed her secrets.
Again, seeing as you're making me repeat myself, none of your goddamn business. My temper didn't scare him. He worked for me for years and knew how far to push.
Cocky bastard.
He continued.
Okay, so at least we know she can talk, or at least write when she is ready.
However, I think it might be best if...
I swallowed my growl.
If what? He sighed, cringing a little as my ire thickened.
If we drop her off at the next port and be done with her. Like I said, drop her off at a cop shop. Her body can heal, sure. I'll do everything in my power to ensure she's as healthy as possible,
But even cured, there's still the matter of her mind. My hands curled into fists. My patience waned. I had too much shit to do before I could visit my newest phantom guest, and Michaels was pissing me off by assuming things about Pym he didn't know. You don't know her either. Yes, but at least I planned to. I owed her for reasons I couldn't untangle yet. I didn't intend to throw her overboard just because she might be mentally unstable. Fuck. All of us were mentally unstable to a degree. I wouldn't be a hypocrite to deny otherwise. She was one of the strongest women I'd come across, and she hadn't spoken a word. That sort of strength, it did things to men like me. It made me want to break her and shelter her in equal measure. It set a war in motion between the devil and angel on my shoulders, and only time would tell what part of me would win. My gaze narrowed. There is nothing to discuss about her mind. But she needs someone to talk to. If she ever talks. Michael straightened, as if I had offended his medical expertise. I sewed her back up. She will be able to talk. It's a matter of if her mind is capable of speech, not her body. Swiping a hand over my face, I smiled tightly. And for that, I'm grateful. Thank you for your commendable care once again. However, you do not need to concern yourself with her mental healing. Do you intend to do it? He crossed his arms. His audacity set my blood hissing. And if I said yes? I'd see you'd be setting her and yourself up for failure. His head bowed. No offense, of course. I glowered at his apologetic stance. Some taken, but not enough to fire you. We shared a smile. The tension dispersed. He said, I won't tell you how to care for her. That's not my business, like you keep reminding me. But I do know you. I know what you struggle with, and I know what we do in order to manage that. Thescuttle. He paused before forcing himself to speak honestly, even if I might not want to hear it. Thescuttle, as damaged, and rightfully so, whatever trick you think you can use to fix a lifetime of abuse? Well, I'm just warning you, it won't be easy. It might not work, and you need to be prepared to get rid of her if her vulnerability makes you relapse. I stood. This meeting was over. Michaels wouldn't get near her again unless it was for strict medical reasons. I didn't tolerate things being close to those I deemed vulnerable, especially when I grew protective of someone. I'd already doomed Pimlico by deciding her rehabilitation was my burden. She was mine in both possession and obligation, which meant her health and well-being was my concern, no one else's. No one. The title of her notes squeezed my gut. Each tissue square remained safely tucked in my desk. In the 6 hours since we'd set sail, I'd read each and every one. 2 years worth of thoughts and pleas. 2 years worth of research that I would use to break, restore, and ultimately get what I wanted from her. Her notes made me privy to her secrets, delivering questions I had no way to ask. Yet, more complications in the complex restoration of her mind. Thank you, Michaels. Despite your concerns, I appreciate your expertise. He nodded, knowing when to give in. You're welcome. Moving toward the exit, he placed his hand on the doorknob. She's been through a lot. Regardless of what I said, I'm glad you found her. You saved her from a tragic situation, and I have no doubt she'll be incredibly grateful. My schooled features remained calm as he smiled once again and left, latching the door behind him. The moment I was alone, I let my true thoughts paint my face. Frustration, anticipation, but most of all, disgust. Not at the implied gratefulness Pimlico would feel toward me, but at the reasons Michaels urged me not to do this. He's right. I should heal her and let her go. I should hand her back to the life she'd been stolen from. Then again, what I should and shouldn't do had always been my biggest downfall. I wasn't qualified to cure a mind, and I sure as fuck wasn't capable of keeping my own desires from clashing with what was acceptable. She'd been lucky. I saved her from that hellhole. Although, She wasn't lucky I'd been the one to steal her. Pym was no longer in a tragic situation with Ulrich.
She's in one with me.
Chapter 4. Pimlico. Dear no one, I'll rip this up the moment I've finished, as I have no safe place to hide you. But I had to tell you what happened. I have to give you the good news. The best news. The news I hoped to write for 2 very long years. He's dead. He's dead. Oh God, I'll never get tired of the thrill and pleasure of writing those 2 words. He's dead. They're dead. Every single bastard, apart from Monty, is dead. I pulled the trigger on Master A. Are you proud of me? Happy for me? I want to keep talking to you, but I don't know how much longer they'll leave me on my own. I don't want to be caught. He stole our previous conversations, but he won't steal any more. Perhaps in a few weeks when I heal, I'll be able to whisper my confessions to you instead of scribe. Maybe then life will be normal. I just finished shredding my latest note into tiny fragments and scattering them in the drawer when the door opened. I hadn't budged from the single mattress with its overly starched white sheets and the drip-feeding drugs and who knew what else into my system. I expected the doctor again. I wanted it to be the doctor again. I wanted more time on my own before I had to face my new future. I didn't get what I wanted. My first peace in so long vanished the moment he prowled into the room. Our eyes met. The world once again stopped spinning and flipped upside down. Whatever power he'd held over me in my white room still lingered. Stronger and more intoxicating now, I was in his home and under his authority. Elder paused a few meters away, his gaze dropping from my eyes to my chapped and sore lips, then to my stark skeleton beneath the yellow nightdress someone had dressed me in. The cheery buttercup fabric ought to bring light into my dark existence, but it only amplified the greens and browns of my ugly, ugly bruises. I wanted to be free, and if I couldn't be free, then I wanted to be naked, like normal. I didn't like the confines or the mind-twisting conditioning I'd been subjected to, where clothes were my nemesis and not to be trusted. Plucking at the yellow gown, I did my best not to wrinkle my nose. I looked juvenile in lemon white, while he looked distinguished in midnight. If I had to wear clothes, I craved to don black like him. Black would hide my discoloration and give me a refined power that nakedness in white could not. His black eyes, almond-shaped and regal, trapped mine. His body exuded tightly reined power with simmering lethalness. His strong jaw clenched as I studied him the way he studied me. My lips tingled, remembering the way he, with all his masculine violence, had slammed to his knees, cupped my face, and kissed me as if whatever drew me to him drew him to me with equal strength. A shadow fell over his eyes as he crossed his arms, highlighting ropey muscles and hands ready to inflict danger or death.
I see you're just as opinionated here as you were there.
My eyes flared, my jaw jutting out in question. What the hell does that mean?
Don't cock your chin at me, Silent Mouse.
Don't use my dad's nickname. The name Mouse did not belong to him, even if my body did for the time being. He didn't notice my annoyance. His graphite dress shoes clicked on the white-tiled floor as he strode forward. His dark gray t-shirt and faded jeans didn't match the formal footwear. My eyes drifted to his muscular legs, then to the floor where the grout lines and color were a little too reminiscent to Master A's. I knew it was due to sanitation rather than personal preference, but it still made me queasy.
I feel the same way about white as you do.
His voice borrowed whatever power his body had over mine, slipping through my ears.
It's a disgusting color, and will be abolished from my home.
Hating the persuasiveness he had over my eardrums, I hunched into myself. He thinks he can read my body language so easily. It only made me want to hide deep, deep inside, when only minutes ago I wanted to look him in the eyes and thank him for all that he'd done, to grab his hand and squeeze so hard with 1,000 appreciations.
How is your tongue?
The urge to press the agonizing muscle onto my palate to see if it was still intact made me wince. The past hour on my own, I'd struggled not to touch it, inspect it. I wanted a mirror to see how close I'd come to being disabled for life.
I take it it's uncomfortable.
You make me uncomfortable. I had no way to ask him to leave, but I wanted him gone. I wasn't emotionally or mentally equipped for him, his questions, or whatever future he'd already planned for me. Can you go? For just a little while? I stiffened at my rudeness and silently added, I'm grateful, truly, but I'd also be grateful if you left me to rest in peace. He chuckled, not seeing my message this time.
At least you still have a tongue.
That's true. My annoyance at his high-handedness faded a little. I pursed my lips, flinching as the bottom one cracked from whatever implements they'd used in surgery to keep my mouth open. I'd grown used to tolerating men in my space, even when I screamed for a moment alone, which was good seeing as Elder had no intention of leaving. If he was here to learn about me, to interrogate me for his pleasure, then I would do the same. I would catalogue and pay attention. I would try to figure out what he wanted before his lips opened to say it. The smug way he crossed his arms antagonized me.
Do you intend to use it now you're free?
I'm free? I shuffled higher in my pillows. You mean you'll let me heal and then take me back to London? To my mother, to university and cafes and the mundane normalness of everything I've missed. He ran a hand through his hair. The sharpness of his jaw, depth of his eyes, an achingly dangerous presence intimidated me. He was the epitome of calculated and gorgeous, a man not to mess with, a killer never to disrespect.
I misspoke. I meant now you're free from him.
He towered over me, his shadow kissing every inch of my skin.
Not free in the general sense. You owe me, Pimlico. I told you I wasn't the hero.
Yes, but you did rescue me against your promise to forget me. That was progress, if only small.
Do you need anything?
He paced around the end of my bed, his gaze landing on everything in an assessing, distrustful way, as if monitoring an unseen threat. If I did, I wouldn't ask you. Not because I had a grudge against being stolen, again, but because he'd already done too much. He'd given me back my life. What more could I ask? To free you, of course. That had always been my end goal. For now, though, I had to be satisfied with this change of events and contemplate whether I should fight him, submit to him, or bide my time and kill him. I didn't know what path I'd choose, but he was right. I did owe him, and I didn't want to owe him any more than I already did. You could just end it, like the original plan. The flutter of final freedom washed over me. Elder Prest might have changed my circumstances, but he was still a monster I had to survive. Would it be considered weak to take my own life now, or still strong to prevent him from having it? I'd existed with the idea of death for far too long to relinquish the whisper of everlasting sleep. Suicide was never a spineless option to me, but my final hurrah. I wouldn't give that up. Not yet.
Are you tired? We've been at sea for a while. It's almost dawn.
His eyes turned to sharp flint.
Are you hungry?
His questions went unanswered. The drip gave my body whatever sustenance it needed, keeping any tummy pangs at bay. Even if I were hungry, how would I eat? My tongue refused to move, and Michaels had warned me not to insert foreign objects into my mouth. No doubt that rule included food for the time being. I glanced away, clicking the pen open and closed as Elder stopped pacing at the foot of my bed.
I suppose Michaels has already thought about the hunger and hydration issue.
He rubbed his jaw, his fingers scratching day-old stubble. Indecision etched his handsome face.
In that case, I'll let you sleep. I have a big day tomorrow and need to rest too.
Striding to the door, he narrowed his eyes in my direction.
I suggest you relax and let me take care of you. You'll need your energy.
My heart stopped siphoning blood, filling my veins with igloos. What do you mean? Energy for what? The sudden tension in my muscles signaled another problem I'd become mildly aware of, but was suddenly desperately uncomfortable. My bladder. Oh no. My gaze darted around the room, looking for a bathroom. You might have a catheter. My arms flinched to lift the sheets and inspect below. The thought of peeing while in bed horrified me, but I had been unconscious for a long time. When I'd had my tonsils out at 15, the operation had endured a complication. They'd kept me overnight with a catheter so I didn't move from a lying position and disrupt the seared wound at the back of my throat. Is this like that? I couldn't tell. I could pee and find out the messy way, or I could struggle out of bed and somehow manhandle the drip until I found the facilities. Either option, I had to wait for Elder to leave before embarrassing myself. I waited for him to go. Only he didn't. Cocking his chin, he stared at the tension in my shoulders and my bunched hands on the sheets. Slowly he moved away from the door back toward me.
Are you okay?
My head didn't bobble. I didn't answer his question. It wasn't insolence, just a lifetime of self-preservation. He sighed angrily.
You can give me clues, Pimlico.
Not about this. I can't. It was too embarrassing. Leave. If Michael's returned, I'd write a request for a female nurse to help, or I'd manage myself. I felt strong enough to clamber out of bed. I'd be wobbly from the operation, but would make do. Like I always do. Arching my jaw, I stared at the door. I owed him my utmost thanks, and he would get it. I would pay him back. I would find a way, even if that way was abhorrent to me, but not now. Elder growled.
God damn it, you don't have to be silent with me.
In case you've forgotten, my tongue isn't operational. A dark smile twisted his lips once again, following my train of thought.
I know your tongue prevents you from speaking for now, but your body isn't damaged.
My eyes fell to the ugly bruises and scars. Not damaged. How can you say that? How did he look past the grotesque marks on my skin and see someone I'd long since forgotten? He chuckled harshly.
I didn't mean that you're not injured and that fucking bastard didn't do a number on you. I meant you can wave your arms and shake your head. You can reply to me now you're safe.
Am I safe? He glowered, lowering his jaw.
Don't look at me like that. If I say you're safe, understand?
The urge to nod was stronger this time. I ignored it. Safe from Master A, but am I safe from you? The unspoken question hung like cinnamon smoke, matching the rich spice of his aftershave. He knew where my thoughts had trailed, but didn't answer, giving me a piece of my own medicine. Fair enough. I could empathize with how frustrating it was to converse with someone who didn't reply. I'd been the receiver of that frustration from Master A long enough. Ulrich. His name was Ulrich. He's not your master anymore. I jolted as Elder suddenly strode to the side of my bed and touched my forearm. My skin tightened and heated beneath his touch.
You're not telling me something.
I'm not telling you many things.
I think I know what it is.
I doubt it. I squirmed a little as his fingers clenched my wrist. The tension in my body squeezed my bladder, reminding me I'd better remove him from my presence soon or risk wetting the bed.
I didn't let them put one in.
My eyes flared. One what?
After everything you've been through and the molestation you've suffered, I didn't want you to feel taken advantage of.
I frowned. I had no idea what he meant. He huffed, letting my wrist go. He ripped back the sheet covering my yellow nightgown and mottled legs.
A catheter. I didn't let him insert one, and it's been hours since you were in surgery. I know why you're tense and keep staring at the door.
Shit, How does he do that?
You need to go to the bathroom.
My cheeks instantly scalded. I dropped my gaze, scrabbling for the sheet he'd just torn off me. Leave, then I can fix my problem on my own.
If you think I'm going to let you stand up without support, you're a fucking idiot as well as a mute.
With fierceness and impatience, he placed one arm around my back, dislodging the softest pillows I'd had for years, and slid the other beneath my knees.
Hold on to my neck.
His command came a split second before he hoisted me from the bed and into his strong, terrifying arms. I gasped, or as much as I could with padding and gauze stuffed around my mouth, and instinctively slung my arm over his shoulders. The drip cord swooped over his head, stinging my hand where the needle pierced my vein.
Grab the IV and wheel it with us.
Elder pointed at the medication with his chin. I did as I was told. I had no intention of letting the wheeled contraption scurry behind us with its only anchor in my flesh. The moment I grabbed the cold steel, he moved. The only sound was Elder's shoes on the floor and the pound-pound of his heart hidden beneath his T-shirt, and the impressive sizzling dragon I knew resided on his skin. It took 2 seconds to cross the room, and another 2 for him to rearrange me in his embrace to bend and open the door, revealing a small bathroom with a stand-up shower, shallow separate bath, and toilet with vanity. The sight of porcelain made me shiver with anticipation. Without saying a word, Elder very carefully positioned me from horizontal to vertical. He let my weight shift ever so slowly back to my legs, never looking away from my face. He made me self-conscious, frustrated, itchy, all manner of things, but not afraid. Having a male touch me made my heart grab its rape whistle and prepare to blow like it always did with Master. No, Ulrich came for me. However, no sexual interest was present in his gaze, merely assessment about my health. His breathing came hot and deep as he took a step away, but didn't unlatch his hands from around my shoulders. When I didn't wobble or black out, even though lightheadedness made my head swim, he grunted.
Once again, I underestimated your strength.
Almost reluctantly, he let me go, moving another step.
Even after a long operation and even longer imprisonment, you can stand without support.
The statement was more than just truth, but an analogy for all I lived through.
I'll wait outside. Call me.
He smirked, catching himself.
Bang on the wall when you're done, or I'll just barge in when I hear the flush.
Pushing a finger in my face, he growled.
Don't get any ideas of heading back to bed on your own. I'm not leaving.
Oh, God. He was going to stand outside and wait? Listen? I spun around in mortification, trading lightheadedness for wooziness. Backing through the door, Elder looked over my shoulder at the small mirror above the silver sink. Our eyes met in the reflection. His shadow lurked behind me, black and sinful with harsh secrets in his gaze, while I stood in sad, not cheery yellow and random bandages. We were worlds apart, yet for some reason, he'd not only invited me into his, but stolen me to share it. I didn't know why I deserved such an invitation, but I needed him to know just because I wasn't ready to talk. I wasn't ungrateful. I'd kissed this man. I'd felt something for this man. He needed to know I didn't take him for granted. Blinking purposely in the mirror, I bowed my chin with utmost respect. He sucked in a breath as he stepped away from the bathroom, pulling the door closed. I barely heard his whisper as he said,
"You're welcome."
I shuffled painfully to the toilet and prepared to do my business. His scent and lingering presence kept me grounded, while my body found comfort once again. Once finished, I stood, wobbling on legs far too weak, to flush. I tensed for an unwanted visitor. I needed a bit more time to get my thoughts in order and feel somewhat sane. When he didn't barge in, I used the extra seconds to wash my hands and scrub my face as best I could, avoiding my sore mouth. I couldn't stop the apprehension that I still belonged to Ulrich, and any moment he would be back to hurt me. Once I'd slicked back my wild, dirty hair, I turned with full intention of knocking on the wall for him to escort me back. However, the spin upset the tiny balance I had, and I stumbled. Falling like a paper building, my knees gave out, crumpling me from proud skyscraper to rubble on the floor. Bones and muscles protested. A guttural groan escaped, sounding nothing like a girl and more like a severely mistreated dog. Ouch! The door smashed inward. Elda stood vibrating with livid impatience.
I told you to fucking bang on the wall.
I was. I tried. I hung my head. He strode forward, towering over me. Every instinct tensed for a kick, a wallop, something I was used to for disobeying. Instead, he sank to his haunches and tipped my chin up with his finger.
You're mine now, Pimlico, and I'll take much better care of you than he ever did. But if you continue to defy me, if you fight me at every turn, we'll have a fucking war on our hands, and I'll win. Got it?
I closed my eyes, but he shook my jaw until I reopened them.
Understand?
There was no urge to nod this time. It seemed anger elicited the opposite of me. Be nice and ask softly, and the need to reply became almost unbearable. Yell and scream, and I shut down, no longer able to hear questions, just rage. Elda breathed heavily.
You'll learn soon enough. You'll see.
Scooping me up, he carried me back to bed. My heart hyperventilated, intensely aware of his bulk trapping me. Placing me back into the sheets, he removed his touch as soon as my weight shifted, as if he couldn't stand to hold me any longer than necessary. I smarted at the rebuttal even while my body breathed a sigh of relief. Once I settled, sleepiness crept like poisonous fog over me. Turned out, I didn't have as much energy as I thought. His voice lost its bite, slipping into molasses.
You'd better get used to invasion of privacy, Pim. I stole you because I want to know you. I want to uncover what you keep hidden. Give me what I want, and this will all be a lot easier on you. Don't, and you'll rue the day you refused.
Without a backward glance, he strode away.
Chapter 5, Elder. 29 hours had passed since I'd brought aboard a stowaway. In that time, I'd washed away the death of 2 more victims and did my best to justify the shame compounding deep inside me. For 29 hours, I'd stayed away because I had no choice. At Ulrich's, I'd been allowed one of everything. 1 kiss, 1 taste, 1 touch. For an addict like me, it was the only thing that helped. I was allowed to sample the vintage, so I didn't consume the bottle. Pim didn't work that way. Every sip left me wanting more and more and fucking more. Her silent strength undermined my hard-earned calmness, hurtling me back to the days when I first stepped from the sewer and claimed my stolen throne. Focus. Work. Don't let your thoughts stray. The instructions I religiously followed were easily whispered, but hard to follow. I turned to another method, one I seldom used, to quarantine my wayward thoughts. However, nothing could prevent the repetition of how warm her fragile form had been when I'd carried her to the bathroom. How my heart coughed in panic and salvation from having her so close and dependent. She'd almost cracked my self-control. Michaels is right. I shouldn't have brought her here, regardless of what I wanted. She wasn't good for me. I wasn't good for her. She was better off under the quiet care of Michaels and his small medical staff, even if he pissed me off. I would get my answers soon enough. I would ensure she paid me back after she healed. And once I'd satisfied my ever-driving demand, I'd get rid of her so I could find peace once again. For now, the doctor would be my link to her. He'd given me updates on her well-being and would start her on soft foods at lunchtime.
Yesterday, I'd asked again how soon she would be able to talk. All I'd earned was an angry scowl. In terms of conversing time frame, that was up to his patient. I just hoped his patient understood how reckless her presence was in my life, and the sooner she could give me what I wanted, the safer she would be. Then again, I was afraid she would never talk, even once healed. She'd spent 2 years silent, 2 years of notes to a fictional entity, all dated and delivered in utmost silence. I wanted a timeline of when she would be physically cured so I could force her to talk if she overspent my generosity. I'd give her 2 weeks. If she hadn't said a word by then, I'd force her. The captain looked up as I marched onto the bridge. The Phantom was second to none. I designed this ship the year my fate changed and put no restrictions on my requirements. Once the vessel was completed and sailed elegantly out to sea, people took notice. Inquiries flittered around, asking where I'd bought it and how they could acquire such a fine craft. When they found out I'd designed the one-of-a-kind superyacht and bought the firm who built it for me, orders came swiftly with no marketing or request for their business. I sort of fell into the trade.
"Good morning, Mr. Prest."
Julfer Scott came highly recommended. Not just as a sea captain, but also an ex-military commander with an exemplary track record of sniper shooting and weaponry. Being at sea was the safest and most dangerous place to live. Safest because humans were few and far between. Peace existed in the vast blue beauty and uninterrupted sunshine. However, Mother Nature could drown us all with a simple storm if she so pleased. Even without a tyrant like Mother Nature as our landlord, living at sea was treacherous because out here, no rules applied. A neighboring craft could very well be a kind traveler wishing to share a drink and adventures, or a killer wanting to board, loot, and rape. In the years the ocean had been my postcode, war had found us twice. Both times the Phantom had been sandwiched by two yachts, rigged with antennas and men with machine guns. They hadn't won. My death toll had steadily grown, and the sharks enjoyed a good feast that night as we tossed the pirates overboard, leaving them to sink into the briny depths.
"Anything to report, Joffer?"
I clasped my hands around the old-fashioned helm. That was a design I'd wanted, not because of practicality, but because the kid inside me never grew up. I'd ruined my childhood and my brother's, but before that, when life was simpler, I'd loved my brother's schooner that we'd played with in the bath. I loved the steering wheel where we'd placed one-legged Lego Blackbeard to